so nice to be here. This is so fancy. I love fancy MOPS gatherings. Not that regular MOPS gatherings aren't great, because they are. I was first introduced to MOPS after I had spent a lot of weeks crying in my condo trying to figure out how to breastfeed my baby. And my friend from church said, we should go to MOPS. It's this mom's group. And I was like, stop, I don't. That doesn't sound fun to me. I don't want to tell everyone else the problems I'm having with this baby who I really love, and it's not coming naturally to me. It's going to make me feel weird. But she dragged me to MOPS, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me in that really early season of motherhood, because I just found this amazing community of moms and just women who were in that same season just trying to figure it out, and it was such a blessing to me. So it's just a joy for me to be here to share with you and bring a message of hope and faith over fear. So before we get started, I'm just going to introduce you to my family, because this is just sort of what makes me tick in the season of life that I'm in. So that's my husband, Brent, up at the top. That we went to the Rose Bowl because we both went to Penn State. So we were obsessed with football just in general, but we both went to Penn State. So it's easy to root for the same team in our house. No one has a fight over this team versus this team, which is awesome. I played softball at Penn State, and he went there. We weren't there at the same time. We actually met in Costa Mesa at an alumni event, at a bar, cheering for the football team. And it was just love at first clink, I guess. So that's our little family in the middle. That's my daughter, Rooney. She is 3 years old. She turned three about 2 weeks ago. Just the joy of my life. On the left-hand side, you guys can see that's our pregnancy announcement. So it is a 1960s movie poster recreation called Womb Invader. And my dog, Rowdy, is up in that flying saucer at the top there, just because he was my first. I never thought I would be a mom. And when I got a dog, it was my first glimpse into I can be a mom. I'm maternal. I love this animal. And I thought animals and dogs particularly were really irritating my entire life. And then I got a dog and it just blew my mind. And I just, the love pouring out of me toward this little animal, I think prepared me to become an actual mom. So that's that. And then on the right-hand side, the top, that is Rooney. She is, I like this picture because it really just gives you a sort of a window into the type of human being you're dealing with, because she's just insane. In the best way, she's super energetic and just really excited, and she likes to wear Hulk fists while she's trying to ride a four-wheeler, because that's just her personality, is who she is. So that's a little bit about my family. We named her, we didn't name her after the principal in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, but we did. We had it on a list of names that we liked, and we watched that movie, and we were like, oh, Rooney sounds like a cute name. So that's how she got the name Rooney. Yep. And I always like to start with just a little introduction into my family, because family is very important to me. I mentioned this a second ago, I never expected to be a mom. Lots of challenges and scary things have happened in my life, and I just never thought God had motherhood in the plans for me. But I was just very wrong about a lot of things, which I will share with you now. So second slide, growing up, and I mentioned softball a little bit ago, I was obsessed with sports. I was that annoying person you played sports with when you were younger who would throw their helmet down the dugout when they struck out, or we played checkers together and you would win and I would flip the checkerboard and yell at you. That was me. I was just ultra competitive and obsessed with sports and games and winning, because I liked how it made me feel. It made me feel like I mattered, like what I was doing was worth something. And a little background you just need for context. So I grew up in Orange, California, which is 25 miles north of here, in a little town, and my family, my mom and dad and sister and I, all went to the same church school combo, where you do all the check-the-box church stuff. You go to church on Sunday, you stand up, and they sit down, and you repeat the words, and they tell you to say stuff, and you do that. And then you memorize your catechism, and you go to communion class and confirmation and do all the things you're supposed to do when you go to a church-school combo. And my home life was the complete opposite of everything I was doing at church and school. Just was not happening at home. We weren't praying at home. We weren't reading the Bible at home. We were just busy. My parents both worked. And their focus for us was just not building faith or talking to us about God or who Jesus was or any of that stuff. So we just did it at church and school, and then at home was totally separate. Which is why I think I gravitated towards things like sports, right? I didn't really understand my identity in Christ. I didn't understand that I was a child of God, that he made me unique and special, and that there was this bigger plan for my life. That truth was lost on me, I think. And it started really early. So I latched on to sports because it made me feel good about myself. And I could work hard and I could, you know, get respect. And people would really, you know, when I would earn something or like, you know, earn an award on the sports field or when I did something well, I got, you know, recognition for that. And it made me feel good. And as I sort of think through and share my testimony with you today, I've divided it into games because, like I said, I grew up ultra competitive and just games were such a big part of my life. So my time as a child, adolescent, teen, and then my time post-college, and then my time now as a mom, like I said, I've just divided into these games. So the first game is hide and seek. And I have a slide for that, yep. There's my adorable daughter posing for pictures. She, I think about this game a lot because Rooney likes to play it and she has no idea how to play it. And you all have young people, like you're trying to teach them how to play actual games with you and like imagine together and go do things and bond. But she doesn't understand hide and seek. Her idea of hide and seek is, Mom, I'm gonna go in your bed and I'm gonna close my eyes and I'm gonna count. And when I say, come and get me, you come and get me. And I'm like, that's not how you play that game. But we're working on it anyway. The game that I played that I really feel like encompasses my time as a child, and every time Rooney tries to play this with me, I just think about it, is hide and seek, and it's hide yourself and seek the approval of the people around you. I was, like I said, I didn't really understand who God made me to be, so I just went looking for approval and behaviors and things I could watch other girls doing that made it seem like they had it all together. So I would just adopt those behaviors. And what that looked like for me was putting on, and you can hear like remnants of it now, like a loud, sassy attitude. Because I thought, okay, if I act tough, people are going to respect me. I'll walk with a swagger and I'll keep my head up and I'll tell people what to do and I'll just be loud and sassy in everybody's face. And that will exude confidence and make me feel good as a human being. So I did that. I was very embarrassed of my body physically. And y'all are grown-up girls. Like, we have all struggled with insecurity and comparison and, you know, what's beautiful versus how do I feel about myself? We all do this, and we still do. This conversation is a woman's conversation now that we all grew up. But when I was younger, that time child, like middle school, high school, I just was so confused about why my body looked the way it did. I was really tall and I felt like I was awkward and weird looking. And I remember, here's a good example. I remember being in a shoe store in fourth grade. This is like way before even middle school. And my mom took me to the Vans shoe store on Tustin Avenue in my town. And we were trying on shoes. And I remember putting my feet inside this pair of teal Vans and curling my toes up inside because I was so angry that my feet were bigger than I wanted them to be. That I just faked that they fit, and my mom bought them for me, and I wore them for like 2 years. And that's an embarrassing story, but I tell you that story just to give you a little insight into how insecure and lost I was as a human being. And when my daughter plays hide and seek with me, I can't help but think about that time in my life when I was trying to hide and trying to seek approval by just mimicking behavior. And we all have young kids, they do that, right? Like, Rooney physically hides when she gets into trouble, like behind things that I can fully see through. There's this plant in our like corner, it's like a tiny skinny plant, and she'll go hide behind it like when she does something wrong, like I can see your whole body, you don't need to hide from me. She likes to seek out behavior, right? She came home the other day and told me that something was real stupid. And I was like, you're three. We don't, like, those two words together we don't use. We don't use the word stupid, but I don't know where you heard that, but you heard it somewhere, and then you brought it home, and now we need to talk about it. But the point is that we all hide, and we all seek, and our kids do it too. And as moms, and as someone who never expected to be a mom, we have to be on the lookout for when our kids are playing that game. Because I know what happens in a negative way when you continue playing that game and no one pulls you out of it. You can't pull yourself out of it. But we have to watch our kids and listen for their words and be aware of their behaviors and just identify when they're hiding and identify when they're seeking and do what we're as moms uniquely designed to do, which is just help them to stop, right? You correct the behavior. It's just like potty training or sleep training, which are terrible things, by the way. I don't know who invented them, but they're awful. You know, we just teach it, and over, they're eventually going to get it. And I think it starts with just helping kids understand their identity in Christ. God made them on purpose for a purpose, and they don't have to hide, and they don't have to seek out behavior in the world. They can seek the Lord and his word and find out exactly what they're supposed to find out. Second game, tug of war. So what happens when you hide and seek for so long, right? And you start to make mistakes and you start to develop toxic relationships and an eating disorder and just lots of mistakes were made in my attempt to fit in and be like people and be accepted. And I entered into this time when I was at school and in college where I was just tugging very hard against what God had for my life. The theme during that time in my life, like end of high school, college, and 2 years post-college was this theme. I know everything. I can do it by myself, and I don't need anyone's help. I remember saying to my dad in the backyard at my childhood home, I was home from college 22, smoking a cigarette. And we don't know each other, but like, let me back up. There was like a little time of life where I smoked cigarettes and I thought I was super cool. And I smoked one in front of my dad in the backyard. I'm still horrified to this day. Yes. And I remember telling my dad, I was like drinking and smoking, and dad, I remember saying, dad, I know everything. I have everything figured out. I don't need you to help me. And I told my dad he was stupid for believing that God existed. I said that to my dad, and I believed it at the time because I knew everything. I could do it by myself. I didn't need anyone's help. And I am reminded of that conversation with my dad almost daily now because I'm potty training a three-year-old person. This child, and I love her. Like, her picture's not up here. It'll be up in a second. She is a delightful human being. And we, you know, like, your children are the joy of your life. But this tiny person actually says to me as she barricades herself in the bathroom with my towels and my rugs and locks the door. I've had to unscrew with a screwdriver the door probably 11 times because she locks stuff in there and she yells, Mama, I don't need your help. I can do it by myself. I know how to do it. And we don't need to get into, you guys know why she can't wipe herself. Like, I don't need to explain why you're 3 years old, you don't know how to do it. I'm gonna do it. I know more than you, and just let me help you. Let me help you. But I get to do that with her now, and it's just, like I said, a reminder of that time in my life where I thought I knew everything. I didn't need anybody's help. I could do it all by myself. I was so insecure as an adolescent and a teenager that I got into college, graduated, and was hit with like an extreme loss of the identity that I built for myself. Because what were the two things I excelled in that were in an instant gone? Sports and academics. I was a great student and I was a great athlete. And I graduated, and those two things went away in a day. And I just reached out and tried to latch on to the first thing I could find that would help me feel like I was worth something again. And that was being successful, make a lot of money. I thought, okay, if I can buy a house by the time I'm 25 as an unmarried woman, that is going to impress people. So I took a job. And in college, I majored in my two favorite subjects, writing and Spanish, because I just loved those. I can't explain it. I'm a writer. I'm a communicator. I like telling stories. I like speaking languages. So it makes sense that after college, I went into finance. No, it does not make sense. It makes zero sense. But in my head, I went, oh, you don't need to do what you love to do, what you're passionate about, what you're gifted and talented to do. You just got to go make money and do that in a way that's going to convince people you're successful and you don't need anyone's help. You did it all by yourself. That's really impressive. And I worked that job for 2 years, made a ton of money, worked for a mortgage company, calculating loan payments and amortization schedule. I mean, this could not be like further away from how God made me as a human being. I did that, bought a house December 2006, and I moved in January 2007, and in March 2007, 10 years ago to the week, I moved right back out and into my parents' house because I was diagnosed with metastasized thyroid cancer, and it basically was so extensive that it was from here up. It was all over the top half of my entire body. I had no idea. I had no symptoms. I was in the doctor's office with my mom, and thank God she came with me. And the doctor did like a quick exam, right? You go to the doctor for something, you call them up and you go, and they check you over. And they usually order a test. This doctor ordered no test. He checked me for 2 minutes, and then he put his hands on my hands, and he looked into my eyes, and he said, "Aaron, you have cancer. I'm positive. What are you doing tomorrow? You need to have surgery." That doesn't happen. You get an MRI first. You get a scan. You get an ultrasound. You get an x-ray. You get something, right? The doctor doesn't tell you in 2 minutes that you have a serious problem, but that is what I had. I approached my treatment in those first 2 months. I know everything. I can do it by myself. I don't need anyone's help. I approached it like an athlete would. I'm gonna put my head down. I've trained. I've done strength and conditioning and weightlifting, and I can push myself through it like an athlete would. And I tried that for 2 months, and then in June 6th, 2007, I will never forget this day because I had like a major breakdown in the bathroom at my parents' house. So if you know anything about metastasized thyroid cancer, you have to take radioactive iodine to treat it. Not many people in here know what that is. Okay, perfect. So it is radioactive materials that you swallow, and they go throughout your whole body, kind of like chemo does, and it seeks out like the bad cancer cells of that type of cancer, and it kills them all. And I took that pill in the doctor's office. The doctor came in with a, like wearing a hazmat suit. Yeah. Covered head to toe in plastic. He brings in a metal box and he opens the box and with his like serious glove scoops it up, like scoops the pill up and drops it into a cup and hands it to me because he can't touch it because it will literally radiate him. And I have to drink that. So I did. And my mom, you know, what do you do when this happens, right? Your mom drives you home in the back of her Suburban. You're under like a lead-lined blanket because you don't want to radiate her, right? And I sat out on the curb. My mom saran wrapped everything in her room because she had an attached bathroom. I stayed with my parents for 3 days, saran wrapping everything because you can't touch anything in there because it gets radiation on it. And I spent 3 days in that room all by myself. No hug. No one to hold your hand or put their arm around you. And I was all by myself, just like I wanted. And I got progressively more dizzy and panicky, I think. I started to feel really hot and scared, and I worked myself into this like frenzy of anxiety that Jill was talking about earlier and just worry. And I laid down on the floor in my parents' bathroom and put my face against the tile because it was hot and I thought it would make me feel better because it was cool. And I was just exhausted and so broken and scared that life was over. That I prayed after having not really prayed ever and thought God was listening. Like church school combo, check the boxes, bow your head, repeat the words, talk to God. I never thought that was actually happening. But in that bathroom, I prayed for real. And I said, "God, I'm sorry. I can't do this by myself. I need you to help me." And he did. I instantly felt better. I sat up and I got out of that room and I thought, okay, if I don't believe, let's revisit that. And I spent a little time thinking and praying a little bit more. But what I realized about being in that room and what potty training a toddler helps me realize every day is that sometimes you're just in this tug of war with whatever situation you're in. and you're trying to pull one way and this other thing is trying to yank you in the other direction. And I had just tugged myself through mistakes, through lies that I had let the world feed me about who I was. I just had tugged myself down to the end of this rope that I was holding. And at the end of your rope is exactly where God meets you. And my life is proof of that. That when you are just open enough to say, you know what, I can't do it by myself, and I do need help, and the grind and toil of this life is too much for me to handle on my own, He's right there to meet you in that space and show you a better way of doing things, show you the way that He made you to be, which is in a close relationship with Him. Third game. Tug of war is always the hardest one to talk about. I cry like every day. I was an emotionless robot person for like my young life, and just crying is like, my mom always like, don't cry, it's weak. But I cry all the time now. So apologies. Next slide. This is the slide I like talking about. I mean, I like talking about that story too, because it's an awesome story. But tag, hide and seek, not a great game. Tug of war, like really my breaking point. And then tag. I got sick. That story, 2007, was 10 years ago this week. I had cancer 5 times total, once every year for 5 years. Just came back and back and back and back. And that was 5 years ago. Haven't been sick since. Yeah, we can clap for that. It's awesome. For somebody who thought they had their life nailed, I know exactly what's going to happen. I'm in control of everything. I can do it by myself. I don't need anyone's help. Boy, was I wrong about lots of things. But tag is by far my favorite game. It's the season of life I'm in right now. Rooney plays this game with me again. She is 3. She doesn't know how to play. So I say, let's play tag. And I come and get her. And she runs straight toward me. Because she loves me. Gosh, I love that kid so much. You guys know. But she doesn't know how to play. It's adorable. If you think back to the time you played tag when you were a kid, and I'm going to make you participate right now, show of hands, who liked playing tag when they were younger? Some people, not a lot of people. It was not a very popular game, because sometimes you didn't want to be it. You didn't want to get touched. Someone tagging you, like, fall down on the floor and cry, crumple into a little ball in the grass. Like, I don't want to be it. That was not me. Ultra competitive. I would slow down so people could touch me, and then I would run after everyone and tag everyone, even when I wasn't it anymore, because everyone went down, and that's what I do. That's what you do when you're competitive. That's how I played tag. So after I got sick that first time, 2007, I went, okay, I'm gonna die for sure. They didn't catch it early. The doctor was like, oh, you have cancer like everywhere, like all over your chest and your neck and in your brain, and like, I just made peace with it at the beginning. Like, oh, I'm not gonna be here very long. So what should I do, God, with the rest of my life? And I got this little touch, this little tag. Be a teacher. Okay. I went back to school 2 months later, finished my teaching credential in my 2 favorite subjects, English and Spanish. And I got my first job teaching high school 8 years ago at a school in San Diego. That's why I live there now. I met Brent, like I said, at that, you know, alumni event, about a year into getting sick, and he was like, you're the one. I don't know how he knew that. He did comfortable stalking of me at the beginning. I say comfortable because if you say stalking by itself, it's like, oh, are you fine? You know, you married him, is it cool? Yeah, it was comfortable stalking. Example, he made me a mixed CD of romantic songs 2 weeks after we met. Prior me, it would have been like, I'm running away. This is scary. But my heart was just getting softer, and I don't know what it is, and now I know that it was God working in my life, and just he pursued me in exactly the way I needed to be pursued, just like God does. And we got married in 2010, like right in the middle of all that cancer stuff. And I dragged my heels for a bit because I just had boxed. I put God in like a little box. Like, I know exactly what's going to happen. So I was like, I'm going to die. We shouldn't get married. And he was like, no, you're the one. Like, we're supposed to get married. And he just knew. So we got married. 2010, tag, you're a wife now. I coached softball and taught and tutored and mentored kids from 2008 to now, and I spent a lot of time with them in the classroom. And the same month, I had my last battle with cancer. We got the idea for Bible Bells. And I just felt this other tag, like, tag, write a kids series, focus it on the women of the Bible, because no one learns about the women of the Bible, everyone learns about the men of the Bible, every girl can name every Disney princess, and I'm not knocking Disney, but they can all name the princesses, they can't name one woman in the Bible. I wish I would have had a hero from the Bible who was a girl to look at, and to know that, you know, God does use women in a mighty way, and look at these examples inside God's word of women who weren't focused on what the world told them and who prayed and who were patient and brave and loved the people around them and stepped into like a leadership role to usher in God's kingdom. Like, where are those women? So write a children's series. Okay, cool. I started writing the series, and it's like June 2013, and we find out we're pregnant. And it's been 10 years since I got sick. I never thought I would be a mom, ever. I mean, ever. And I was so happy, but I was so terrified. Will I be around? How is this person who struggled through that mess of a life and who made tons of mistakes, how am I qualified, able, equipped to be the mother of this daughter? Like, shock of the world I was having. I thought I was having a boy for the longest time, which is hilarious. Obviously, she would be a girl. It's just funny. You know, I decided I will do my best. I'm going to talk with her about the things that I struggled with, insecurity and comparison and trying to measure up to the world's standard of beauty. I'm going to talk to her about my mistakes, and I'll be open and honest. It's what I needed when I was younger. And I needed a way to speak truth into her life. And it's what we're all trying to do as parents, right? We want our kids to grow up and just be the people God created them to be. And we don't want to get in the way of that. We wanna guide them toward that, not mold them into this person that we want them to be. And you know, growing up little people is just the calling of a lifetime. I've been tagged for so many things since I got sick. But being a mom is so different than any other call. Because from the moment you're a mom, like, you're literally changed forever. Like, nothing is the same after that. It's permanent. Even if our kids leave this earth before we do, we don't ever stop being their mom. Like, this is a special call, and it's a very special tag. And I think sometimes that can feel really overwhelming, like the responsibility of that is so great, like I'm in charge of mothering them, are they going to be okay? But the truth is that you were handpicked, like God equipped you and made you, and part of what he did when he made you was he made you to be the mother to your children, and no one can do the job that you can do. And I try to remember that when I feel, you know, like in the middle of the night when I'm sleep training her. Who is sleep training right now? Anyone? Oh, it's just a nightmare. You know, I don't get more patient like the 12th, 13th, 14th time she gets up in the middle of the night. The smoke starts coming out of my ears and I get louder and I try not to make eye contact with her because I'm like, just remember your training, but it doesn't work out. I don't feel equipped sometimes, but God did equip me, and I don't worry about, you know, the cancer coming back or can I do it, because I'm here. This whole thing started 10 years ago, ended 5 years ago. We started a company. I have a marriage. We're building a family. I'm the CEO of a company. Now I quit my job teaching and I'm doing this full time with my husband. We're like a husband and wife business team. I mean, If you had asked me during the tug of war time period of my life, would I be standing up on a stage addressing a group of women who and telling my personal story of faith and my testimony about how God worked in my life, I would have looked at you like you were an insane person, because that's just, no one was further away or farther away from the Lord than I was. Doing everything in their own strength, thinking that they had everything figured out. There's nothing that can separate you from the Lord, even you. And my life is a testament to that. This verse, just in this season of life, has given me so much comfort. And as somebody who just toiled and worked for the approval of others, this has given me so much peace, and I just want to share it with you. It's Psalm 62:1. Truly my soul finds rest in God. My victory comes from him. Obsessed with sports, lots of mistakes. Didn't think I'd be here long enough for any of these callings or tags or any of this to happen. What a miracle. What a miracle that my life is, and that I can stand here today and talk about what God did in it. If there is someone, and if there's someone in this room who needs that, who's been tugging, who feels lost or confused or tired of doing it alone, just know that this is an amazing space to just take a first step if you need to. There's someone at your table or someone in this room who has a word for you if your next step is to just get that much closer to Jesus. Faith over fear is what has sustained me from a time in my life that was just riddled with confusion and anxiety and, you know, not knowing what was going to happen. That faith, that trust in God, and it's that hope that Jill talked about, that word hope, and just knowing that no matter where you are in your situation, God, all you have to do is turn around and call out to him, and he will be there. Will you pray with me? God, what a blessing it is to be here, just sharing the story with these beautiful women. You did not design us to spend life with our heads down, trying to do things ourselves. And being a mom can feel like that sometimes. Being a woman can feel like that sometimes. You tell us in Luke chapter 8, verse 17, that there is nothing hidden that will not come out to the open, and nothing concealed that will not be disclosed. You didn't design us to live separately from you or in a spirit of competition or feeling insecure about who we are. You didn't design us to hide nor to seek things on this earth. If those feelings are here in this room for anybody, I ask that you remove them. I ask that you help any person in this room who is withholding or withdrawn or separated or has created a barrier between themselves and you. I just ask you to remove that right now. In Proverbs, you tell us that when we seek you diligently, we will find you. And I know that to be true. After many, many years of not seeking you, of running full speed in the opposite direction, the second I turned around, you were there. Thank you for that. You made us and created us to be in a relationship with you, a close one, not to be at war, not to be pulling or tugging against a life that you laid out for us. And if anybody here is doing that, if you're in this room and you just feel like you've tugged yourself down to the end of a rope, that person is waiting for you, God, to enter in and just hold them and give them your peace. I ask for the courage to help whatever person in this room who is holding that rope to let go of it, to stop tugging and just hold tight to you. it's hard to remember this as moms, but when things aren't going well, or, you know, we don't feel like we can do it, or we're not doing a good job, help us remember that everything that we're doing, that is happening, is working together for good in our lives and our kids' lives. In Isaiah 45, verse 3, you tell us, I will give you hidden treasures, riches stored in secret places, so that you will know that I am the Lord who calls you by name. I pray that every woman in this room feel called to that role of motherhood, that we would enter into discussion in a few minutes, God, that we would leave this room today feeling tagged, feeling that burst of energy, that exhilaration that comes when you get touched by something and then you turn around and you go do it. Help us to remember that you've tagged no one else to be the moms to our kids but us. You've equipped us to do the job. Father, I just pray that for anyone in this room who needs to take that step toward you, let that come out in the next few minutes. You know, in discussion, I pray that the people that need to step forward, or someone who is wrestling with something, that something happened today that would change that and move them closer to you. It's in Jesus' name that I pray all of this. And just please bless our discussion in a few minutes, God. Amen.
Thanks, Erin. Thank you. Yeah.